Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. So live and exclusive international cricket returns to TalkSport 2 in the coming weeks with England's ODI series in South Africa and their two test series in New Zealand, both live on the station. We'll build up over the course of the show to those two tours. As well as that, England fast bowler Saqib Mahmood joins us to discuss his upcoming trip to Sri Lanka with the England Lions. A newly appointed, what used to be called fast bowling coach, is now elite pace bowling coach Neil Killeen joins us to reflect on his new role and leaving Durham after 30 years with the county. And we'll end the show by looking at a change of national coaches in South Africa and some of the big domestic stories in English cricket. So plenty to come over the next hour. As always, you're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. So, Army, what's whetting your appetite more? England playing in South Africa, three ODIs, Jofra Archer's return to international cricket, or the two test matches in New Zealand?
I think the two test matches in New Zealand matters, because at this minute in time, we're doing all three ODIs, but I'll be still cold in London. By the time we get to New Zealand and the test match is starting Mount Maunganui, I'll have a shorts on, a T-shirt on, and I'll be sitting right next to you, who has been sitting in the warm for the last few weeks in South Africa and in Australia. But look, whichever series, I think both are going to be fantastic entertainment. It's brilliant to have them on TalkSport and TalkSport 2. Well, mate, Goffey's going to come back and pop in for a day. We've got Mickey Arthur coming on and joining us. We've got a whole host of big names, and to have cricket on TalkSport is fantastic, especially the Red Bull side, because I think if you'd said 12 months ago, we've got two test matches in New Zealand, I think we would have been turning our nose up at it and going, I'm not looking forward to that. After the last pitches that we had at Mount Maunganui, where they broke Jofra Archer, like you mentioned, 50-odd overs, the way that team was playing 12 months ago, thinking, right, we could be going over for 10 days boring cricket. Not under McCullum and Stokes. It's been a massive transformation, and I'm really looking forward, up close and personal, talking about this fantastic side, which will be two test matches, or there's three test matches between now and the Ashes, probably the most eagerly awaited Ashes series there has been in a long, long time. It's going to be excellent to see it close and talk about it.
There are so many different storylines to explore, and I want to ask you about McCullum and Stokes going back to their homeland. I mean, they both said that they wanted to get people talking about Test cricket again and watching Test cricket, and my goodness me, they've managed that. Because the anticipation ahead of those two test matches is just huge. But just before that, the storyline that is obviously fascinating me is what is at stake in these ODIs coming up in South Africa? For South Africa, it is automatic qualification for the World Cup in India at the end of the year. There are still some mathematical permutations, but they need to win that series. Otherwise, they go to Harare to play the pre-qualifiers along with the likes of the hosts, Zimbabwe and Ireland and Scotland and the Netherlands, who knocked them out of the T20 World Cup. So that there is a huge amount at stake. They are currently without a coach, a white ball coach, because Rob Walter, who takes over that team, doesn't start until the 1st of February, and the first ODI is on the 27th of January. They don't have a management or a coaching team in place. They need to win two out of the three games and then win their remaining two ODIs against the Netherlands in April. So, you know, there's one team with everything to gain and lose. What does it mean for England?
I think England is just as, there's just as much on it, because there's 14 players going over there, and there's 14 players going over there going, if I don't perform here, I might not go to India. It's as simple as that. The England cricket team in white ball cricket is one of the hardest sports teams for me to get into. You know, world champion in 50 over, world champion in 2020. So what's at stake on that is 11 blokes that get selected are going to have to perform, because if they don't perform, might be out of team. So that's a pressure in itself. So I think that's, it's going to be a fascinating series. You're right. South Africa don't need to go through this qualifier, the pre-qualifier. We've seen what happened to the West Indies in the T20 competition. Sri Lanka, more professional, they scraped through and got into the World T20 competition. But if you don't go with the right mindset, you'll get beat off Netherlands. You'll get beat off Scotland. You'll get beat off Ireland. Zimbabwe are at home, who are getting stronger. You know, Gary Ballance has just gone back to play for them. He's no mug. He's a proper player. So you don't want the pressures of being the big boy that everybody wants to beat, even though it's just a short plane ride away in Harare. You're going to go there and you're going to be going to the sort of the major tournament, having already qualified. One thing I will say, man, is we're watching, and I haven't seen a great deal of it. I've seen bits of it more when Joffrey was bowling, because I wanted to see where he was at. This SA20, that has got to have enhanced the performance of the 11 players that South Africa are going to pick from ability point of view to play against England. The problem I see, and it's always been the case for the likes of Pakistan and sometimes South Africa, a lot of the time with the West Indies, is the mentality of the individual. The players will be in decent form because they're going to pick 11 players to play against England who are smashing it everywhere in the SA20. But if them players are mentally with it against a good England side, then they'll fall by the wayside and not be they'll get beat. So there's a huge amount of pressure for South Africa. One, you'd hope they'd stand up to the occasion, but it depends on the politics behind South African cricket, because that always seems to, every time you go two forward, it tends to knock you not one back, but one and a half back.
Yeah, and I don't think that the South African team, national team, is in a very good place at all. They, as I said, are coachless at the moment, and I think they're largely feeling a little bit leaderless, and they have all gone to their various franchises in the SA20, and it's a form of escapism. But the crowds have been good, and they have been performing well. I'm fascinated by that series, but mostly with what is at stake for South Africa. Now, let's go back to baseball. I understand that Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes have, if not been on a tour of the county ground, they've certainly been speaking to the county coaches and encouraging them. This is a question, I'm phrasing this as a question, encouraging them to embrace the baseball style of play in domestic cricket. And as always, the erudite, fascinating Mickey Arthur, who will be joining us for the first two ODIs on commentary. Let's hear his thoughts. He was speaking to H&J a little bit earlier on Talk Sport.
It was very interesting to listen to and fairly enlightening. You know, it was the approach they've come in with has been exceptional and very exciting. And, you know, they've taken this England cricket team to places I think that they didn't think they could get to. But it must be on the basis of England having some very, very talented cricketers who are able to play with that freedom and get it right more often than not.
Steve Harmison made a good point to us yesterday, Mickey. He was saying that it's all very well if you're a player that plays a lot of franchise cricket and the riches around that and maybe on a nice central contract. You can take risks, you can take chances, you can play with that freedom. When you're maybe a county player on 30 grand a year and your career and your contract is rested on you maybe getting runs, maybe it's not quite so easy to play without that fear factor.
Good point.
That's a Harmy, as always, makes another very good point there. He's 100% right. You think of the young players that are going to come into that England cricket team, and it's really hard just to walk in there from the word go and play with that freedom. But if you've got the backing and if you've got the trust of your leadership group and they allow you to flourish in that environment, but also give you the security of saying you're in it for a period of time here, it does allow you to play with that little bit more freedom. You know, one wonders what would happen when things just start going wrong or they lose a couple of games. Do they panic? Do they change that? Which route do they go? Do they change personnel? Because at the minute, it's really exciting and it's been liberating almost to watch.
I mean, the young sort of English players in the Derbyshire squad, Mickey, I mean, are they excited by the prospect of it? Do you kind of talk about it at the county?
Yeah, we do. You kind of talk about your brand, and I think it's really important to play your brand. And certainly from the time I was playing professional cricket in South Africa to now, the game has moved forward considerably. So as a coach, you've got to change the way you coach, and you've got to change your outlook on the game as well. Because, you know, these young players are coming in now, they're playing with a freedom that certainly I was never allowed to, or certainly I would never thought was right at that particular time. Cricket's moved on so much, made it such a more spectacular sport, I think. And these young players now, they come into the game with no fear of failure. I sometimes look at them and I see some of them that are bulletproof, and I'm thinking, wow, if only I had that type of mentality when I played. So it's a different generation now. And we as coaches have got to move with the times.
That was former South Africa, Australia, Pakistan and Sri Lanka and current Derbyshire coach Mickey Arthur talking to H&J a little bit earlier on. You featured in that, Harmy. And as Mickey said, you brought up a brilliant point. It's all well and good, as you said, asking players to play with this carefree desire to win and to put being prepared to lose in order to win and embracing this fashion. And that's all very good for the elite, isn't it? It's like asking the world's top golfers, all of whom are multimillionaires, to go for the pin on every green.
Yeah.
but most golfers can't afford to take that risk. And the same applies to cricket.
Yeah, 100%. And I welcome what Ben and Brendan have done with the county coaches and the county chief executives. I would have gone the other way if it was me, Manners. I'd have gone Ben and Brendan talking through the Professional Cricketers Association to cricketers themselves, not to the coaches and the directors of cricket, because we've had many conversations and it's going to come up, Steve Smith's going to play for Sussex. If I'm a director of cricket, I don't care about whether Steve Smith's going to get batting practice against England. You know, my job is to look after Sussex or Durham or whoever. I want to have one eye in England. No question I will be helping England as much as I possibly can. But my job's on the line about my county performing. If I can get Steve Smith, I'll go and do that. Where from Ben and Brendan, what they were trying to do is to try and talk about the carefree attitude of playing, and this is how we're going to get in the England team. And when you get in the England team, this is the way we're going. I probably would have been going down the player route and talking to the academy player. The under 16, under 18, under 21 players who are going into their first professional contracts and giving them an insight on what it's going to take. Because a player at 27, 28, 29, who's on 40 grand a year at one of the smaller counties, he's not going to be playing carefree. He's thinking, right, can I get a contract? Can I play well enough to get to end of July, August, September? And maybe this is the wrong mindset. This is a sort of dog-eat-dog mindset. Can I play well till July and August to keep my contract for next year to make sure my mortgage gets paid and my rent gets paid and my kids are getting food and everything like that? It's very, very difficult for me to sort of comprehend that message going in through a director of cricket and a coach at the first-class level. For me, I'd be going in at the academy level trying to drive these players into different mindsets and the thought process of that. How the game's played to then go through that it's ingrained in them before they have to then start talking about financial ramifications of contracts when they're going through a bad spell. So I warm to it. Brilliant, brilliant. More information Stokes and McCullum can give to English cricket. I'm all for it. But I think they maybe missed a trick and not gone down academy junior player role as opposed to going in with coaches and director of cricket.
Fascinating. We'll be watching with a keen eye. And a reminder, of course, that you can hear live and exclusive ball-by-ball commentary of England's two test series in New Zealand on TalkSport 2. It all gets underway on Thursday, the 16th of February. And before that, of course, we bring you England's upcoming ODI series against South Africa, which begins next week. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined live now by England fast bowler Saqib Mahmood, who's on his way back from injury, a frustrating year. But thank goodness for the Lions. And Saki, I suppose, you know, your recall to the Lions and for the tour of Sri Lanka is a fabulous example of why the Lions setup is so important. And congratulations. Are you fully fit and raring to go?
Yeah, I'd like to class myself as fully fit now. I always pull people up when they say, how's the rehab going? Rehab's for somebody who's still injured, so I sort of tell everyone I'm fit. And yeah, look, it's a great opportunity. I was supposed to be, you know, playing in the UAE T20 League this month, but it sort of came just a little bit too soon. And it's great that we've got the Lions opportunity, even out in the subcontinent. So it means I can sort of get out and play. I'm not being thrown straight into an international game first up. But yeah, it's obviously a great standard to start in. And yeah, in the subcontinent as well, which is where the World Cup will be later this year. So yeah, look, I'm really excited for that.
Saqib, just on 2022, it sometimes as a bowler, I know myself, when you get an injury, you get time to reflect and take you into the place, you know, your own place and what drives you forward. And then sometimes there's like a reset of goals and, you know, where you go from there. How hard was 2022 for you after unbelievable chance in the West Indies? And then now, where's your mindset going forward after having all that time out and reflect on where you want to take your career forward?
Yeah, no, I think it was frustrating for many reasons, but I think more so because, you know, my first test squad was back in 2019. And the competition among fast bowlers at the moment is very high. And, you know, there's a good crop of us all challenging for a spot. And, you know, I got my chance after 2.5 years, which, you know, I felt like I did all right out in the Caribbean. And then, you know, also at the start of this season, preparing for the first test, chose not to go to the IPL to prepare, you know, because it was like, this is my chance in test cricket. So I wanted to take it and be completely ready for it. And I don't really like to look too far ahead, but I think in that moment, I was gearing everything towards playing in a test shirt. And then, you know, a week before the New Zealand test match at Lords, it all sort of gets taken away from you. And I think that was the initial tough bit. And then watching that on telly as well was hard work. But I think, you know, you sort of process it. There's a period where you reflect, like you said, and then when you start getting back into things, and that's when the drive really comes back in. And for me, if I'm honest, after a month or two, I had over three months of complete shutdown. But then when I was close to getting to bowling again, I started to look at my action. I started to look at things. Because I knew I had time on my side. I wanted to come back a better bowler. These days, it's so hard to work on something or grow something new just with the amount of cricket you've got. So, you know, I tried to change my mindset into using this time wisely to try and come back a better bowler and grow things which I've always wanted to, but just never had the time to.
Talking of changing mindsets, Saki, I just wonder what you thought of watching England and the way they play and winning 9 out of the last 10 test matches. Stuart Broad was laughing and joking the other day about, you know, turning to Ben Stokes every now and then saying, Do you think we can lose the fifth slip now? And he's saying, no. 5 slips in a gully. That's the way we're going. That's. are you excited or maybe even slightly intimidated by bowling in the new Ben Stokes Brendan McCullum era?
I'm actually really excited, and I think I'm quite lucky because in 2021 I played under Stokes as captain in the Pakistan series. It was a COVID squad where the main guys got COVID, so then the second squad came in and I had great success over the 350 ODIs we played. And even then, we had an attacking role. I mean, Babar Azam, number one batter in the world throughout the whole... Every time I bowled at him, I had 3 slips in and no cover, and that's in a white ball game. I remember having 4 slips in a 50-over game at Lords. So, you know, I've sort of experienced all of these things. And if I'm honest, I felt like it brought the best out in me as well, because it's a bowler and a captain thing, and Army will be able to tell you as well, is when you make decisions, it's something a bowler speaks to their captain about. And that was exactly what happened in that series. You know, we always took the positive option, and I feel like when you both buy into it, it naturally just brings the best out in you.
It helps having a captain that you know you get on well with. I was out in the Caribbean and seeing close hand how well you and Stokes you got on. So how important is that, having a captain that you are comfortable of talking to. You are, even if you're going through a bit of a dodgy feeling in a session and a spell and thinking, I've many times that I feel that I really don't have any idea what I'm doing here. I've got no control. My rhythm's not great, but I had someone like Michael Vaughan stand next to me and I could tell him what I felt. How easy it to talk to Ben in that way because of your relationship with him?
I think when you obviously have a good relationship with someone and that person is the captain, I think what it allows you to do is be honest, like you've just said there. And, you know, he's always at mid-off. And, you know, when I was watching in the summer, that's where he sort of fielded since he's come back in after his finger. So it's just that sort of, you know, when you have a good relationship, it means you can chat constantly. I think he reads the game well. So a lot of the time you're just talking about the game. And if you feel like something isn't working, I feel like he's the type of person you can tell him, and you can tell him your ideas as well. And he takes that on board. So look, what he's done in the past 12 months, well, just under 12 months, has been amazing for the English game. And me sort of sat on the sidelines and watching a little bit. It's definitely a team which you want to be a part of. You know, sort of similar to the England team after 2015, everyone in the county set up and everyone around is like eagerly trying to get into that team. And I feel like it's the same now with the test squad. And for me, definitely something which, you know, hopefully in 2023, I can break into that and play some part in it.
You've got some competition. You're sitting there with a Lightning shirt on, and probably the biggest competition, the best one, is the oldest one, and that's Jimmy. But take, you know, I've brought Anderson out of it because they've probably not got, you know, a year or two left in them. The rest of the bowling group, how exciting is it to be a part of trying to get into the group first and foremost, and be a part of what is 10, 12 very, very good fast bowlers who are ranging between the ages of sort of 24 and 30?
Yeah, there's so many around, and everyone's different. Everyone has their own skill set, and I think that's what's going to be important for me. I think, you know, I'm sat here at Old Trafford. I play most of my Lancashire games at Old Trafford. I feel like it requires a certain skill set to do well here. Now, it's one of the flattest wickets, I think, in the country, and, you know, there's not much for fast bowlers on it if you don't get it right, especially on the county wickets where they can be quite slow. And for me, I think my aim at the start of the season is trying to be as good a bowler as I can at Old Trafford, because I think that opens up a spot in an Ashes test match here at Old Trafford. And that's been my thinking. And I think that obviously comes from doing well for Lancashire here. But I think it's one of my strengths playing here as well. And if I can transfer that into, even if it means playing one test match in an Ashes series and playing a part here at Old Trafford, then if that's my role, then, you know, I'll try and be ready for that. But I think, you know, trying to do something like that can open up more options as well. So for me, I understand there's a lot of competition, but I think I've got to focus on what my strengths are, what my skill set is, and how that may be used in certain conditions and certain grounds.
You mentioned about turning down an offer from the IPL to concentrate on red ball cricket. I think it's fair to say that the majority of players take a little while to settle into test cricket. And if I may be so bold, you didn't take very long. I think you looked very much at home, very much part of test cricket. You looked like you belonged. And it's also fair to say that some players take years before the Barmy Army embrace them with their own with their own chant. They took to you straight away. That must have been a big part of you just taking to test cricket.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where, don't get me wrong, the wicket was obviously ridiculously flat, and it's not the wicket you want on your debut. You know, you see spinners turning up on an absolute ragger and taking fifers, and yeah, it was flat. But I think that's where my mindset is different, and it's something I've got used to. Like I mentioned, playing at Old Trafford, is you see opposition bowlers who are used to playing on green seamers, and they come to Old Trafford, and I love to watch the first half an hour, because you can just see. Sometimes it's after one over, sometimes it's after two overs, sometimes it's most fast bowlers here, within their first bowl, you just see body language. And that's what gets me going. That's where I want my point of difference to really stand up. And, you know, we talk about wickets here, and I'm almost like, you know what, make them as flat as possible, because that we're going to take 20 wickets and the opposition aren't. And similar in that test in Barbados, I really saw it as a challenge. I didn't feel intimidated that, well, you know, I didn't drop my shoulders or anything thinking this is a flat wicket, this is not what I wanted on debut. I just thought, how am I going to make the most of it? And it took me a long time to get my first wicket, but you know, I just wanted to really show that resilience, just to make sure that I kept asking questions. And, you know, I got a little bit of success and then it happened pretty quickly. So, yeah, that, I think that's where mindset and sort of my upbringing here at Old Trafford has been key. And with the chant, I remember one of my mates was out there and he told me that the night before the game, he said, "I swear they're singing your songs around the bars here." And I was like, "Nah, I don't have a song." And then I remember in the morning, one of the guys, while I was doing the warm-ups and sort of taking catches on the boundary, sort of mentioned, "We've got a song for you and listen out for it." But yeah, it sort of had to wait a couple of days before I got out there. And yeah, it's quite cool actually.
And final thought about Sri Lanka, you're not going to get any green seamers out there, are you?
No. No. But like I said, it's good prep again. You know, there's a World Cup in India at the back end of the year. I'm not focusing too much on that, but it is at the back of my mind. And Sri Lanka will be a good test for it. And, you know, there's Bangladesh after that. You know, there'll be a squad released at some point. But if I can do well in Sri Lanka and hopefully be ready, who knows if I might have a part to play in that or not. But it's a challenge. And before I get into the summer and focus on red cricket, I think I've got a good chance here to try and bank some white ball cricket in before a heavy sort of 2-3 months of red ball cricket.
You don't want to be too good at bowling on flat wickets and reverse swing, because you'll end up just being the flat wicket specialist.
You know what, that has crossed my mind at some stage. I was sort of thinking, you know, I should be allowed to bowl in the green seamers, but yeah, look, if whatever way these days to try and get into the team, I'll take it. And you know, there's definitely a lot of competition, so it'd be great to force my way back in sooner rather than later.
Well, it's been fantastic to have you on the show. Thank you very much indeed for your time. And I'm glad the rehab is all done and you're fit and raring to go. And we look forward to seeing you in Sri Lanka. But very best of luck out there.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and two-time county championship winner Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll speak live to the newly appointed England elite pace bowling coach, Neil Killeen, who joins the national setup after spending 30 years in county cricket with Durham.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm delighted to say, as promised, that we are now joined by newly appointed, I was going to say, England bowling coach. But the position's been redefined. Neil Killeen is now England elite pace bowling coach, having left Durham after 30 years with the county. We do love a good job. Rebranding killer.
Yeah, well, it's actually a little bit shorter than the one I've got in Durham, so it's we can probably fit it on things now, so it's a good thing.
Was it a difficult decision? You know, you spent over half your life with Durham.
Yeah, look, it's always a difficult decision when you've been somewhere for for the length of time that I have. 30 years is a long time, man and boy, to be in the same place. And it's this place is, you cut me in half and you'll see the Durham badge. And that's something which did take a lot of thinking about. But when England come calling, there's no doubt about it, I'm going to take that opportunity. I've always wanted to work as high as I can, whether that be as a player or a coach. And these opportunities don't come around that often.
You had a bit of insight into England and the Netherlands. And then you had a little sample. I was with you at the end of the Durham cricket season as head coach. Durham's head coach came up. England's bowling coach came up. I'm sure you had to go at both. But which one did you feel as though was the next step for you? Did you? I know you fancied the head coach, but did you feel as though, you know what, working with the elite, just too good to miss up?
Yeah, look, I'll be totally honest, Tommy. I was a little bit torn between what was right and what was the best role for me. I did go for the Durham head coach job and unfortunately didn't get that one, which was a bit disappointing. That was a sort of branch of my career that I was curious about. But I think the specialism and the fast bowling side of things is something which I am passionate about. And I knew the England job was coming up. So it was a bit of a bittersweet sort of ending, not getting the Durham job, knowing that this was coming up. And this is something that I'm really excited about, this role. And during the summer, dipping into working with the full side and seeing the sort of the environment and the vibe that's going around the England setup at the moment, it's very, very exciting cricket that they're playing. And that was white ball. Obviously, the test side has kicked on since then under Ben and under Baz McCullum. And I think to not want to be involved in that, it would have been career suicide for me. And I think that's something which I'm really looking forward to whichever way that goes. And the beauty of this role is that I get to experience a bit of everything, a bit of white ball, a bit of red ball, a bit of the next best, a bit of the Lions, a bit of the young Lions, and I get to coach. And that's what I really enjoy doing.
It's fair to say, I think, that England's fast bowling stocks have never been better supplied at the moment. In cricketing terms, it's almost like you're being put in charge of the crown jewels.
Yeah, look, you've got to take 20 wickets to win a game of cricket, and these boys are the ones that play a big part in doing that. The stocks are really high, and I think a big part of my job is going to be sort of planning and prepping these guys for being ready. So we have got a stock, and their job is a lot easier if we've got numbers underneath them. And I think there's some exciting talent around. Saki is one of the guys that I'm directly responsible for, and I had him out in the UAE and know Saki really well through work that we've done in the past, and it's exciting. I've got Braden Cass, I've got Matt Fisher, I've got Ollie Stone, and then I've got the two Overton brothers who, again, are very exciting talents. And that group of six is my direct responsibility initially to plan and prepare them to be ready to go as and when England need them.
You've just mentioned six names there. Some of them are red, some of them are white. Where do you get the balance? How do you get the balance? And how do you prepare these guys that you might be... Are you preparing them for all formats, or are you just going, right, the next trip around the corner is white ball, we're going to prepare you for white ball. Next trip around the corner is red, we're going to go with red.
Homie, that's part of the next period of conversation for me. It's around speaking to the powers that be, speaking to Keezy, speaking to Mo Bobart, speaking to Stokesy, speaking to Joss, speaking to the coaches in Morty and Baz around what they want, what they need, where the holes are, where the gaps are, what do we need to put into these players in order that when they step up to England, they're ready to play. There's no work to be done.
How much of your job is technical, physical, and psychological? Does the fact that you've taken over 500 first-class wickets yourself and you know what it's like to have bleeding feet and sore Achilles and all of the... I mean... How? Where are your strengths?
One of my strengths is I understand bowling technically. Obviously, I've played the game for a long time, so tactically I'm very astute as well. And that mental side of the game, to be honest, I've worked in the game for a long time now. And one of the big things for me and one of the best pieces of advice that I got on my coaching journey was know the person, know the player. And I think once you learn to know somebody and build a relationship with somebody, you can work with them from there. And I think that's my first port of call with whoever I'm working with, whether it be the six best contracted lads or whether it be the young Lions or whether it be working up into the England sides. It's about building relationships and getting trust amongst that relationship. I think once you do that, you can actually make strides forward and learn what makes them tick as a person, which will then you can filter into their game as a player.
if an international bowler comes to you and says, it doesn't feel right, Killer, I don't know why, it's not coming out right. Can you have a look, see if you can see anything? Is that how it works?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you find stuff that relates to all of them, and that's happened on the trips. The Dubai and Abu Dhabi trip that we did before Christmas was a real good example of that, where we were out there with the Lions bowlers, so we're working with some of them technically, we're working with some of them on skills based, but around that we had the England boys in and around the group. So Jimmy was there, Ollie Robinson was there, Jamie Orvin was there at the time as well, and they would dip in and out, and different pairs of eyes see different things. So again, once you've got that relationship with a player, you can then, they'll trust you to look at things for them.
Just a last couple of things for me. One, how much are you looking forward to Sri Lanka and what will Sri Lanka bring? And the last one is, obviously, it's more of a personal thing. Looking back on 30 years at Durham, highlights of your time as a player, your time as a coach. Yeah, what would you like to say to the members at Durham? Who, I don't think you're finished with Durham just yet, because I think there's another chapter in your story, but at this minute in time, because Manners, one thing I'll say before he answers the Sri Lanka one, for me, he's one of the best coaches. I'm going to say this publicly. He's one of the best coaches I've seen him work with. And when he says he bleeds Durham, he does. Mum and Dad have sat at the bottom of a cricket ground watching Neil Killeen be an under 10 when he was faster at 10 than he was at 22 and still be sitting at the bottom of the cricket ground at Durham. Yeah, they've been unbelievable towards Neil's upbringing and giving, and he is a testament. He's a credit to his mum and dad, and a credit to Durham. What would you say to the Durham fans who, yeah, you've...
I'll start with the Sri Lanka trip first. I mean, that's a challenge in itself. Going out there as head coach, which I'm honoured to be asked to be head coach of that trip, to be honest. It's something which, if I'm going to move in the future to maybe as a head coach role, then I need the experience of doing that. And that's going to be a challenge, but something which I'm really looking forward to. Really good group of players, young players mixed in with some experience as well. And without a doubt, we're going out there to win games of cricket. We're going to look to play in a positive vein. We're going to look to take wickets. We're going to look to score. And we're going to look to win that series. And that's something which is exciting, to lead that team out there. With regards to Durham, wow, what can I say? 30 years has been from the day, it's actually 31 years, pretty much to the month that I got called up as a 16-year-old to go to Zimbabwe. Straight out of school, no passport, no experience of traveling abroad. The next thing I know, I'm on a plane with Wayne Larkins, David Graveney, traveling out to Zimbabwe, and haven't looked back since. That made me grow up, made me realize I wanted to play the game. Went out there, Jeff Cook gave me that opportunity. Jeff Cook then gave me the next opportunity, which was make my first-class debut against the West Indies in 95. Going out there and being presented with my cap was something which, well, look, it's still on a frame on the wall in the house. It's something that'll always be there. To then move on to, I never thought I would experience success at Durham. I must admit, we were whipping boys for a long, long time. And the journey that took to going from that to that first experience of winning that trophy at Lords is something that, I mean, the photos, I've just looked back at a photo today of me, yourself and Collie after that final, and that's a special moment. And to then go on and win the championship and finish my career at Durham with a game where I walked off the field here in 2010 was special. But then to move into the coaching side, and I think that's also been a real journey of enlightenment. It's, and seeing lads progress, seeing Matthew Potts, Braden Carr, Mark Wood come through to play for England under my remit is something which is special. I now get the opportunity to still work with them. And then the other highlight is, it would be remiss of me not to mention it, is my son playing for Durham. To now him come on and start his journey and sign his first rookie contract, and he was meant to be flying to Australia today, but he's broken down with a stress problem in his back, which is really unfortunate. But look, he's on that journey that I've been on, that you've been on, and we know how special that is. And that's a proud moment when I saw him play. He made his debut under my coaching last year. I was head coach when he made his debut in the One Day. And that was a special moment. And I'm hopefully going to see many, many more of them. But for now, it's... I'd just like to say a big thank you to everybody that gave me the opportunities. Big thank you to Jeff. he gave me everything at the start. Dave Harker, who supported me through that first period as well as a chief exec, into now Marcus, Beefy, Tim, and everybody at Durham now, who has allowed me to progress into this new role and made that really smooth for me. And then the biggest thank yous to the members. I think without them, I wouldn't have a career. They've supported me, and they've been there when Durham have been at the worst, but they've been there when Durham have been at the best. My family, to Claire, she's supported me the whole way, and it's been fantastic.
And a final one from me, Neil. I can't let this opportunity go a waste. You shared a room with Durham for the best part of a decade with my co-host. How much did that experience traumatise you and make you the man you are today?
Well, he's got no hair manners. Look, it's been, that in itself was a journey and one that I wouldn't change for the world. You learn so many things, but I think, manners, what you probably need to do is we need to have an adult show version, and we can maybe talk a bit more about those journeys. But now, look, it was brilliant. Army's been my best mate through my whole career and still will be for the rest of my life. And they're experiences that you can't buy. And he supported me all the way along, and I'm sure he will through the rest of this journey.
Absolutely, 100%. I'm chuffed to bits for you. And manners, look, Durham have lost, I think, one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the country. England have gained one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the country. And Killer, we wish you well in Sri Lanka.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Manners, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
That was the wonderful Neil Killeen, England's new fast bowling coach. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison. Okay, it's our favourite part of the show. It's all other business, what's happening around the world. South Africa have decided to split their coaches after the Mark Boucher era, with Shukri Conrad being appointed the Test coach and Central Stags head coach Rob Walter. He's been there in New Zealand for the last 7 or 8 years. He's been appointed as the white ball head coach. Very interesting. Lance Klusener was initially on the shortlist to be the white ball coach. He withdrew his application, having made the shortlist, and not surprisingly. He's got other offers, bigger fish to fry, IPL amongst them. Yeah, interesting. Shukri Conrad is a long-serving coach. He's been part of the South African establishment for many years. He's won trophies with the Cobras in Cape Town, also with the Lions, who he coached in Joburg. He is, I think, probably a safe choice. He's got very little work to do. He's got two test matches against the West Indies at the end of March, and then he doesn't work again until December when India come. Now, there is talk of South Africa organising a few more test matches in the meantime. He's also been tasked in the meantime with overseeing South Africa's red ball domestic coach, domestic structure. Basically, Harmy, Cricket South Africa, they're in a position where the reality is we don't know the way forward. We're going to make it up as we go along. but we can't say that because it doesn't sound very good. I think Rob Walter is a good choice, though. I mean, he changed the mindset of the teams that he worked with in New Zealand. He didn't win any trophies, but he was very highly regarded. He's thought of as innovative and forward thinking. So he's got a hell of a job ahead of him, though. His first major task could be to go to Harare to get the team into the World Cup.
Yeah, he could be out of a job by the start of the World Cup. And that's how sort of fickle and bizarre the politics is. And I look at it and go, well, before the World sort of Test Championship or the World Program was put together, you're thinking, right, split coaches are the way to go forward. But actually in the countries that are only going to play 12 Test matches in 5 years, is split coaches the way to go? Because literally you're redundant for most of the year. So I like the appointment of Rob Walters, because you talk about he's a very modern thinking coach and very innovative. But this is the way South African cricket's going to have to go because of the SA20. They're going to play a lot more short format cricket against better players, playing with better players against better players. So you'd hope that because of that, you know, the thought process of the game would be faster. The ability of the player will hopefully be better. The younger player coming through will be more energetic. And if you've got a coach who can bring all that together and try and marry that with the politics of South African cricket, stands half a chance. On the rest of it, manners, it's like from the outside, me looking in and throwing back to you, you could have Brendan McCullum, you could have Owen Morgan, you could have
Stephen Fleming going into coach South Africa, do they stand a chance? Because if they don't get behind the scenes and off the field and the politics, right, then the coaches are just, they're just meaningless.
That's exactly right. And they're going to have a look at this whole notion of central contracts as well, because I think they've become redundant. There's an acceptance that, even the smaller domestic T20 leagues pay more than Cricket South Africa can pay its best players. And I think that what they're going to have to do is just abandon this idea of what were national contracts set up for? Were they to look after the country's best players, or were they to make sure that they were available? So were they a mechanism of care, or were they a mechanism of control? And I think it's obvious that the control side of things is gone.
But Manus, was any part of this SA 20 cover the South African cricket international or the domestic going forward? So is there a pot of money? It's like in England, the 100 was rolled out, it was signed off because each county was going to get X. The country was going to get X to make sure that the whole train stays on the track and we produce very, very good cricketers. We market the game, the 100, very, very well. And the money from that will make sure that our international players still get the rewards to, push away the other franchise leagues. I think what I'm trying to say is, in a long about way, as I normally do, is there any money from SA20 going into the central pot to pay the international players to keep them basically under the South African banner?
Yeah, that's the theory. Cricket South Africa, in theory, own 57% of the SA20 competition and its revenues. In theory, the difference between the 100 and the SA20, apart from the fact that one is 20 overs and one is 16.4 per team, is that the franchises in the SA20 are all IPL franchises. So India are pulling the strings. The Indian franchise teams are pulling the strings. And so we'll wait and see. It'll take a long time for that money to trickle down into the national team. None of it's arrived yet. So there's a very, very long way to go. And I'm sure that it's a subject that we'll talk about a lot in future. We've got an awful lot to get through as well, so we need to move on. We'll push SA20 to one side. Surrey have signed Kemar Roach. That was always likely to be a long-term relationship, I think, the moment that Gareth Baddy signed Kemar Roach. So he's available for the first few rounds of the county championship. Timal Mills has signed. It's good news for Sussex. They need their bigger players, some of them anyway, to recommit to the county. Yeah, Sri Lanka lost the last ODI to India by 317 runs. The Sri Lankan board has demanded answers. Lots of things catching my mind. Gary Balance straight back into the Zimbabwe team without playing any domestic cricket, having made that decision to leave Yorkshire and rejoin the country of his birth. And Mornay Morkel has joined the New Zealand women's team's coaching staff for the upcoming Women's T20 World Cup in South Africa. I've got loads of questions to ask you about those things. There you go. I've changed a tactic for me this week. I've thrown everything at you, all in one go.
Well, Kemar has got a brilliant relationship with Surrey. I don't think there's obviously many test matches for West Indies, so I'm sure he'd be a valuable asset in London for the next sort of 4 or 5 years. Even though he's at the age he's at, he's a fantastic bowler, and a bit like Jimmy Anderson, doesn't take a great deal out of him when he bowls, and he does like to bowl, for long periods of time. So that's a good sign. And we spoke about Timal, I'm wishing him and the family all the best. And it's, I read his statement when he did. He said, "I'm from Brighton. I love being in Brighton. I feel as though I'm a fully fledged Sussex player." So good on him for staying with the county. What makes me laugh, wanting to demand answers, got beat by India. They could beat in a game of cricket. That was it. They could beat India next week. That's how fickle one day cricket is. They won the under Chris Silverwood. They won the Asia Trophy. Watch some of Virat Kohli's highlights, and it's like he's done that to better bowlers than just Sri Lanka. Trust me. So Sri Lanka might win the next game. Well, the other team asking for a pay rise off the board if they win the next game. So probably just shows you again the politics of overseas boards. Money lives in South Africa and in Australia, so he obviously, it's just a short hop across, and obviously that the World Cup is in South Africa somewhere he knows well, so that's a good appointment.
And finally, Hami, the issue which is dividing cricket, I think, on a worrying level, run out at the non-striker's end. And you know what, Hami? We all know the arguments. We all know that. And some of them are very strong. As I said, it's become incredibly divisive to the point of discomfort, to my mind. And so what I thought we would do is a little cricketing experiment today, because you and I are on opposite sides of the fence. I think it's fair enough. And if you talk about skill, then the skill for a batter, it should be timing when he leaves the crease. But you sit on the opposite side of the fence. And so what I would like to do is to see, for the benefit of our warring listeners who are on one side or the other, there's very little grey area on this topic. I would like to see whether you and I can happily agree to disagree.
Yeah, I think we agree to disagree. I think it's wrong. I really do. And every single, there's no skill factor to it one bit. You just run up and stop and take the bails off if somebody's out their crease. I get the fact that somebody who's got a bat in his hand should be able to keep it behind the line. The one thing I'm going to throw at you then, Manners, if that's the case, we've got the technology in place, right? Because we've got front foot, no balls, done by the umpires. So here's one for you. For the batsman to stay in place, get to the point where the ball has been released or whatever, if the batsman leaves his crease before the ball is released, then whatever happens at that ball, there's no runs involved. So the batsman get penalised. So if a bowler runs up, bowls a ball, and the batsman has took an unfair advantage through the laws of the game, and he gets, hits the ball through the extra cover in the run two, that becomes a dot ball because he's gained an unfair advantage. So take the runs off the batsman of what they're trying to unfair advantage. You've got the technology already in place because you're already looking for the no ball. So you can see the batsman coming out of his crease. Then that stops the man card. It really does. It stops the man card because the batsman will not leave his crease until the ball has been bowled, because he will be penalised runs. That's the currency for me. It's runs rather than kicking somebody's wicket like that. The minute you penalise somebody from runs, and all of a sudden it's like the over, it's dark and you're losing 5-6 overs. You penalise them 5 runs and over, they'll get on with it. They'll start running around. For me, if you penalise runs and you don't have to move technology too much because it's already in place, front foot, no balls there, you'll be able to see the batsman at the non-striker's end, whether he's left the crease or not, in gaining an unfair advantage.
The problem is that less than 0.01% of games are televised and they don't have the technology. I mean, my fear is that, you know, that the run out at the non-striker's end, or a run, will become problematic at every other level of cricket that is not televised, unless we demystify it. And, you know, unless we teach non-strikers to stay in the crease, it's not that hard. It's not that hard. And if they are, then they're tantamount to cheating. And if they get caught cheating, then they can be dismissed. I like your idea very much indeed. And I think we can still be friends over this.
Absolutely, Manners. 100% still be friends on it, but we'll agree to disagree that there's no skill level in one iota in somebody running up, stopping and taking the bails off.
There isn't. Absolutely. How about if the wicket was credited to the bowler?
And if we're teaching kids that, then the game's gone and the world's gone. Well, the world has already gone mad, but the game's gone mad. It's
gone. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Mathorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available, as always, via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at the same time next week to build up to England's 3-match ODI series against South Africa, with every ball live and exclusive on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams.
And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.